terribly, and this is the divided kingdom. So, here it is, just after the Memorial Day weekend, May 26th, which happens to be my wedding anniversary. Unfortunately, my bride passed away a little more than a year ago, as many of you know, Elizabeth. But I've been trying to keep the show going, and I'm going to begin today with a little bit of talk. Now, Elizabeth and I married rather late. We were around 40 when we got married, and the time just went by, and first you know, we were 50 and never had any children. I sometimes feel bad about that, but she had some health problems, and we thought it would be the best thing to forego that, as much as we love children. We worked with them all our lives, in fact, as teachers and tutors. Well, now, sometimes you wonder about having children, because here we have a headline on Fox News, May 24th, 2026, by Stephanie Price. The headline reads, "Viral teen takeovers unleash chaos nationwide as malls, beaches, and restaurants become battlegrounds." In recent months, chaotic scenes have unfolded from Washington, D.C.'s Navy Yard to a Georgia beach pier, a downtown Detroit entertainment district, a Wisconsin shopping mall, and a packed Chipotle restaurant where screaming teens hurled chairs as customers scrambled for safety. Here are five teen takeovers that made headlines across the nation recently. And at the end of this, I'll tell you about another one that just came this weekend. Okay, the subtitle says, "Viral Chipotle Teen Takeover Descends into All-Out Chaos." One of the year's wildest takeover scenes exploded inside a packed Washington, D.C. Chipotle, where screaming teens were caught on camera, throwing chairs, brawling, and sending horrified customers scrambling for safety. The now viral footage showed adults and young children huddled in the corner of the Navy Yard restaurant, this is the Washington, D.C. Navy Yard, as groups of juveniles curled furniture across the dining area on May 16th. At one point, a suspect appeared to use a child's high chair as a weapon before throwing it across the restaurant. The Metro Police Department later released surveillance images of four juvenile suspects wanted in connection with the melee, while the FBI announced a $5,000 reward per person. And local police, offered an additional $1,000 reward for information leading to arrests and convictions. Here's a quote from attorney, U.S. attorney Janine Pirro, that she said after the footage went viral, quote, "These are not harmless gatherings. They are violent, and they are disruptive. It was a takeover of a restaurant by individuals who thought that they could get away with it," unquote. Hundreds of teens flooded Washington, D.C.'s trendy Navy Yard neighborhood on March 14th, overwhelming the area with fights, robberies, and gunfire, despite a newly established juvenile curfew zone. Now, I don't know if that's a separate thing. I noticed that I suppose it is, because it says May 16th on the other one and March 14th of this one. So apparently it's two separate things. Police said the crowd began gathering near First Street and New Jersey Avenue southeast before swelling to roughly 200 teens by the evening. Video shows large groups of black-clad teens running through the streets screaming and fighting as officers attempted to disperse the crowd. Authorities said one teen fired a gun into the air inside a park while other juveniles were assaulted and robbed during the chaos. Police ultimately arrested two juveniles and recovered two firearms. Former Biden White House advisor, this is Biden White House advisor, mind you, Yemisi Egbuwol, wrote on X after the chaos erupted, quote, "Blue cities need to wake up," unquote. Interim Metropolitan Police Chief Jeffrey W. Carroll condemned the violence and said, quote, the behavior would not be tolerated. Then we have a Georgia beach town erupts in panic after gunfire at teen takeover. What began as an unpermitted pop-up event, and by the way, that little phrase is in quotes, unpermitted pop-up event, near Georgia's Tybee Island Pier, quickly turned chaotic when police say gunfire rang out, sending massive crowds of teens stampeding across the beach community on April 4th. Authorities said hundreds of people gathered near the popular pier and pavilion area before officers heard a single gunshot and watched the crowd scatter in panic. Video released by police captured hordes of teens sprinting away from the packed beachfront area. One witness told local media, quote, we were here, but it was like drunk white girls, just a cloud of white girls just walking around. And I'll interject, I don't quite know what that means, but just it indicates the chaos. Going on with the article, investigators later searched for two individuals seen emerging from beneath the pier as police worked to determine where the gunshot originated. Next, we have downtown Detroit, overrun by roving teen mobs. Downtown Detroit descended into chaos April 11th when crowds of teens flooded city streets during a takeover that police say had been heavily promoted on social media. Videos showed large groups running through downtown as officers moved in to break up the gathering. Authorities confirmed a gun was fired during the chaos, though no injuries were reported, and multiple teens were detained as police attempted to regain control. The incident unfolded just one day after city leaders and youth organizers publicly discussed the growing takeovers and called for safer gathering spaces for teens. Next, mall melee explodes as hundreds swarm Wisconsin Shopping Center. Hundreds of teens descended on Wisconsin's Bayshore Mall after social media posts advertised a takeover event, sparking fights and chaos throughout the shopping center on March 29th. Police had increased security at the mall ahead of the gathering after learning about the plans online. But authorities were still overwhelmed as fights broke out across the property and crowds of teens flooded the shopping plaza. One shocking video appeared to show a teen shoved through the doors of a Kohl's department store as screaming spectators filmed the brawl. Other footage showed hooded teens running through the plaza, throwing punches, and fleeing from police. Authorities ultimately arrested 13 individuals on charges ranging from disorderly conduct and battery to resisting an officer as businesses and shoppers were left caught in the chaos. Well, that's most of the article. I'll stop there. I'll just mention that on Fox News a little while ago was talking about such a takeover in Chicago where one teen, I forget the age, it might have been 18, ran a car into a bunch of police. It sounds like no one was badly injured. But some of these things are happening. I know one of them at least said 3 o'clock in the morning. And I have to wonder, where are the parents? Do they have any idea where their teens are at that time of morning? I know the mayor of Chicago, who has tended to be somewhat woke, as I understand it, nevertheless said, parents, you need to be aware of where your teens are. And that's good advice. And Jeanine Pirro and others have said they are going to charge parents, if necessary, for letting their teens take part in these middle-of-the-night melees, as I think the authorities should. Well, I worked with teens for many years as a school teacher, high school teacher. I can honestly say I never saw anything like this. But this is what happens with people when you get a big mob. Anything can happen. People that are normally rather friendly, even kind, can degenerate in a mob atmosphere into hoodlums. And I guess in some cases, this is what's happening. And things that may start out as just a fun assembly of teens can quickly, if one punch is thrown, degenerate into who knows what. Well, all right, something closer to home for most of us. One of my electric bills this past winter was $900. That's by far the highest electric bill I've had to pay in all the time I've lived in this house, which is over 40 years. So I definitely think that the price of electricity is going up. I guess that's the easiest way to say it. Well, I'm not the only one. I haven't gone to Natural News lately very much. Used to go there a lot. I disagreed with some of their policies, but this seems like a good, honest article, so I thought I'd just read you a selection from it. Time doesn't permit reading it all. And I should mention, by the way, the preceding article about the teens was from Fox News on May 24th. Now, we're going to go to Natural News, also May 24th, by Sterling Ashworth, and the title says, Rising Electricity Bills Emerge as Pivotal Issue in 2026 Midterm Elections. Average residential electricity rates increased nearly 13% from April 2020 to April 2025, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Since President Donald Trump returned to office in January 2025, rates have climbed an additional 6%. The EIA, that is Energy Information Administration, projects another 6% increase nationwide in 2026. An economic development finance firm, ICF, warns rates could rise as much as 40% by 2030, which, as we know, is only 4 years away. At that point, I don't know what I'll do. I guess I'll turn the thermostat down to about 50. But all kidding aside, I thought my electric bills would be a little cheaper. It's just me living here now that Elizabeth has passed on. And nevertheless, the electric bills are worse than when there were two of us here. I'm very seriously thinking of shutting off the upstairs, draining the pipes, and putting the temperatures upstairs on a vested bear above freezing level this coming winter. And I slept upstairs, Elizabeth and I did, for, oh gosh, at least 20 years. Never had anything like this before. So I'm going to have to take steps if I want to stay in this house. Well, reading on just a little bit, a lot of this is rather dull statistics, so I won't read it all by any means, but let's see now. The North American Electric Reliability Corps projected in its 2026 long-term reliability assessment that electricity demand will increase over the next decade by 70%, more than 2024 estimates. This surge is driven by data centers, artificial intelligence, advanced manufacturing, and the electrification of residential and commercial sectors. Polling reflects nationwide voter concern. 84% of 2,710 respondents in a January climate power survey cited electricity bills among primary concerns, while 57% of Florida voters in a March Environmental Defense Fund poll said electric bills are stressing household budgets. That, I'll interject, is interesting because in Florida, you don't have the bill for heating that you have here in the Mid-Atlantic region, and even more so, of course, in New England and the northern part of the country. I've been trying to compare the rates last year at this time and the rates this year, and I'm going to have to dig out some bills that I hope I have kept when after Elizabeth's passing, the electricity was in her name. And I should mention, this house is all electric. So it's not just the heat I'm talking about. It's everything from the stove to the clothes dryer to washing machine. Everything is run by electricity. So, nevertheless, $900 is a bit on the high side for me. I've got to get that down if I want to stay in this house. And I suspect I'm not alone. And this is a Cape Cod. This is not a luxury mansion by any means. It's a simple Cape Cod house. It does have enough stairs, but it's not, huge. And I'll have to take every precaution I can to make sure there's no air leaks. And I suspect many of you out there are in the same boat. Well, this is a much more in-depth article and a good one, and I think a fair one. It doesn't criticize either political party extensively. It just says that both parties are going to have to figure out what's going on here and how do you present this to voters. It does say Republicans attribute rising rates to Biden-era green energy policies and regulatory expansions under the Clean Air Act and some other environmental policies. On the other hand, Democrats blame the Trump administration for canceling renewable energy projects and assistance programs, citing the clawback of $8 billion in Inflation Reduction Act allocations. Well, if it's like most things, you can't blame either party completely. But if you want to take a more in-depth look at that, this is from National News on May 24th. Entitled Rising Electricity Bills Emerge as Pivotal Issue in 2026 Midterm Elections. All right, let me interrupt the reading for a few minutes. As you know, you're listening to The Divided Kingdom. Well, if you don't know, now you do. And if you'd like to write to me, I'd love to hear from you. I got some good support that'll keep the program going, and I thank those people profusely for their help. If any of you can also help out with that, it would be great. This program is financed by me. No sponsors, no commercials, just an hour of news. And I try to pick news that is not going to be obsolete in a few days, and news that's interesting to all of us average people, and a little bit that may not be on the major news networks. So, if you want to write to me, write to Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y. Address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. And the zip code is 21609. And if you didn't have a pencil or paper handy, I'll repeat that a little bit later in the program. Just get some writing materials close by. I know a lot of you already have that, and that's great. Love to hear from you. If you don't like the program, tell me, and I'll try to improve it. If you do like it, that would be nice to hear. So I always welcome all kinds of letters. Now, as far as my website goes, it's DividedKingdomRadio.com, all one word, DividedKingdomRadio.com. I've been telling you to look on the archives if you don't hear the program on the original broadcast or the repeat on Saturday morning, but I went to the archives yesterday and they seem to have disappeared, so we're going to have to see what we can do about that. So for the time being, just try to hear the program Thursday evening at 8 p.m., and you can go to the shortwave station's website, WWCR.com. That's short for Worldwide Christian Radio.com, WWCR.com. They have several broadcasts going out at one time. I think this one is maybe on transmitter 2, but you can check the schedule to find out. That's 8 p.m. Thursday evenings, Eastern Time. Now, it repeats Saturdays at 8 a.m. Now, the frequency is different. I should have said the short wave is 4.840. If you want to hear it on short wave Thursday evenings, 4.840. Saturday mornings is 7.940, I think. You have to check my website. I haven't tuned in on Saturday morning for a while because I have other commitments. But that's 8 a.m. Eastern Time, Saturday morning. That's a rebroadcast of the same show as Thursday evening. I do know that definitely the one on Thursday evening is 4.840, 4840 kilocycles, or kilohertz. I'm dating myself by saying kilocycles because that's the old-fashioned way to say it. But it means the same thing, of course. And you know what? I think it's 7490 on Saturday morning. Did I say 7940? I think I got my little dyslexia there. Got my numbers mixed up. I think it's 7.490, and I'll verify that. And there are other ways you can listen, too. And I believe these may not have to be at the same time. So you can check the Internet. I know that kstartalkradio.com, the dear lady who does the website for us, it's free of charge, by the way. She's been very kind to put that way. She has a network all her own with some many, many good broadcasts of Dr. Stan Monteith. Many of you remember him. Some repeats of his best shows, and a number of other good things. So that's K-Star, now no hyphen, just K-Star, talkradio.com. I believe she also has kingdomstarradio.com. And that may have other shows, so you want to check both of them out, kingdomstarradio.com. And I will check into the archives over the next couple of days, see if we can't get that back working again. All right, let's take a look at a couple of other good articles here. Here's something from WorldNet Daily. I think my voice is squeaking a little bit. I guess that head cold I had a couple weeks ago is still just a little bit affecting me. Thankfully, not too badly. So from WorldNet Daily, we have this headline. Everybody was complicit in it. That's a quote. Top U.S. senator sounds alarm on most egregious government scandal in his lifetime. This is by Joe Kovacs, WorldNet Daily, May 24th. The chairman of the Senate Homeland Security Committee is calling the cover-up of the adverse impacts of the COVID shots, quote, the most egregious government scandal in my lifetime, unquote. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, recently released a report titled Unmasked, How Biden Health Officials Purposely Turned a Blind Eye Toward COVID-19 Vaccine Safety Signals, unquote. And Senator Johnson will hold a hearing on Biden officials' failure to detect problems with the shots. Appearing on Sunday Morning Futures with Jackie DeAngelis on the Fox News Channel, Johnson lashed out at Dr. Peter Marks, the former top vaccine regulator at the Food and Drug Administration, saying the physician purposely concealed information in the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS for short. And this is in quotes from Senator Johnson. He, meaning Dr. Peter Marks, was shown 25 adverse events where there were safety signals, including sudden cardiac death, pulmonary infarction, Bell's palsy, different types of strokes, and he hit it. They are lying about it to this day. They continue to use the old algorithm, unquote. Those were the words of Senator Ron Johnson. And of course, if you've been listening for any length of time, you know that Elizabeth and I were quite vociferous even a few years back about the, we would call it a scandal, of the vaccine, how should we put it, the COVID vaccine, so-called vaccine, or vaccines, since there was more than one. Now, here's some more quotes from Senator Johnson. Hundreds of thousands of people that experienced adverse events, the tens of thousands that died, reported on VAERS associated with this vaccine, these people ought to have a cause to action against those government officials that hid what the American people had a right to know. But they lied bald-faced to the American public. And unfortunately, and he says, I appreciate Fox News covering this. Unfortunately, not one major network has picked up the story. This has been 3 weeks now. Like I said, the biggest government scandal in my lifetime. And mum's the word because everybody was complicit in it. And Senator Johnson added, Americans have the right to know, and those affected deserve justice, unquote. On May 13th, as WorldNet Daily reported, Johnson hammered the Central Intelligence Agency for objecting to a CIA agent blowing the whistle to Congress about a massive cover-up involving the origins of COVID. Johnson stressed, quote, this is not political theater. I have years and years and years of built-up frustration of agencies like the CIA, Department of Justice, the FBI, HHS, snubbing our oversight, giving us the big middle finger, unquote. So that was from WorldNet Daily by Joe Kovacs, May 24th. As I said, Elizabeth and I tried to do our part to bring out the dangers of this vaccine. We even wrote a book. Unfortunately, to the best of my knowledge, all the copies of that book have now been sent out. I'm glad people did want to get the book, but now there are no more copies left, and I simply don't have the money to do another printing. But there is plenty of information on the Internet. Here's another one. This one from the Washington Times. And this is a pretty hard-hitting article. The headline reads, Businesses that forced COVID shot should be bankrupted. This is by Cheryl K. Chunley, the Washington Times, Tuesday, May 26th. And that's the very day that I'm recording the program. So this is very fresh. AG Equipment Company, a Broken Arrow, Oklahoma manufacturer of compressor packaging, has agreed to settle a lawsuit brought by employees who were forced to take the COVID shot or face firing. The payout to 43 former workers who weren't allowed to claim religious or medical exemptions as a cause to refuse the shot is $4.25 million. It should be $4.25 million per employee. Companies that demanded employees get the experimental shots, yes, experimental, should be bankrupted. They should be sued into oblivion by all the employees who are forced to take those experimental shots. Yes, experimental. Whether these employees sought medical or religious exemptions or not, the default position of free America is employees as citizens of the United States and therefore endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Those citizens are possessed of the right to determine their own medical treatments. They don't have to ask permission from their bosses to undergo a medical procedure or accept the medical treatment or to refuse the same simply as a condition of maintaining employment. They don't have to choose between a paycheck to feed their families and pay their mortgages and obeying an employer-issued order to inject their bodies with unknown chemicals. The default is employees maintain the authority to make their own health decisions. It doesn't have to be stated. It doesn't have to be written in policy. It just is. But COVID flipped the Constitution on its head and changed the order of assuming authorities. That's very true. These companies and the government, both in the armed forces and in private, not private, but in civilian situations, forced people to get the experimental shots or get fired. We had a doctor that I'm no longer in touch with because he was always anonymous, but he supported us for a long time, and I'm very grateful for that. He lost his job at a hospital in Pennsylvania simply because he knew that these shots were experimental. They were rushed out without proper testing. And he is vindicated I don't know that he ever got his job back. Unfortunately, we're out of touch with him, but I'm very grateful to him for a long period of time when he was supporting this program. He's one of those that lost his job because of pressure from above. Now, was there proper testing? No, of course not. Most vaccines took years to be tested. This supposedly was tested in months. And the evidence is plain. Many people that got the shot, a so-called vaccine, got the disease anyway. Now, of course, the proponents of the shot said, oh, but they would have had worse conditions if it hadn't been for our shots. But there's overwhelming evidence that many people had cardiac problems and many, many other sudden death or severe injuries from these vaccines. Just reading a little bit more, and time is flying, so I'm not going to read it all, but it says, suddenly employers and government entities held the right to decide what's best for citizens in terms of health. And overnight, they ran roughshod over individual liberties. Suddenly, bosses held the whip and cracked it over the heads of employees who questioned their authority to force experimental shots. Yes, experimental, into their arms. Some employers allowed employees to opt out of taking the shots for medical and religious reasons. Others, like AG Equipment Company, did not. Doesn't matter. The principle is the same in either instance. Employers don't have the right to dictate what medical treatment employees should take or not take. And they don't have the right to grant exemptions for medical treatments they're trying to make their employees take. Neither does the government. This is an excellent article. I'm going to skip down a little bit. Businesses that prosper in America's free market shouldn't skate responsibilities and consequences and punishments when they allow that free market to crumble by jumping into bed with tyrants. If businesses want to behave like communist China, what's a move to communist China? Well, this is a good article. There's more to it. This is by Cheryl Chumley, C-H-U-M-L-E-Y, and it appeared in the Washington Times as I'm recording this today, Tuesday, May 26th. All right. What else do we have? Big news lately has been UFOs. I thought I'd begin this little segment by reading from a book that appeared in 1956. When I was a teenager, in fact, in 56, I was barely into my teens. I was still preteen. This book came out, and it's not by any slouch. It's by Edwin J. Ruppelt, who was the head of Project Blue Book for the Air Force. The organization, well, the office within the Air Force that investigated UFOs. And for a while, they did it very honestly. But then, apparently, the powers that be decided it was time to debunk them. And they changed it to Project Grudge for a while. Or else, that may have been the predecessor. This is an interesting thing, considering it was 1956. He introduces the book with an incident. I don't believe he says just where it took place, by Air Force personnel seeing a UFO. And he says the problems involved in this report are typical. There are certain definite facts that can be gleaned from it. The pilot did see something, and he did shoot at something. But no matter how thoroughly you investigate the incident, that something can never be positively identified. It might have been a hallucination. Oh, it might have been some vehicle from outer space. No one will ever know. It was a UFO. That was 1956. Now, how many years ago is that? 70 years. Here we are today. And that same book has come out in a new, rather handsome little hardcover edition because the mystery has yet to be solved. And President Trump has ordered the release of all kinds of data and videos and still photographs and written reports about UFOs. And of course, now the trend is to call them UAPs. UFOs makes it sound like they're vehicles, unidentified flying objects. UAP is a little more general, allowing for all kinds of possibilities. But this one is from Fox News, May 25th, 2026, by Julia Bonavita. UFO insider claims U.S. has bodies of four different alien species from downed spacecraft in government custody. Now, this is Lou speaking. Right away, let me give a disclaimer. Do I believe this? I don't know. This is pretty far out. And yet, knowing the things the government has kept from the public over the past decades, since I've been alive, I really don't know what to think. So let me read it. You can make of it what you want. New claims that the United States has recovered remains of four separate species of alien life are sending shockwaves throughout the UFO disclosure movement, further drumming up conversations surrounding the government's knowledge of otherworldly life. Dr. Hal Puthoff, hope I'm saying that right, and you spell his last name, P-U-T-H-O-F-F, a CIA-funded researcher and former Advanced Aerospace Weapon System Applications Program advisor, announced the new revelation while appearing at a UFO roundtable on Steve Bartlett's The Diary of a CEO podcast, alongside Age of Disclosure director Dan Farrer last week. Puthoff said on the podcast, quote, "Given the level of quality of their technology, if they didn't want to be seen, we wouldn't be seeing them. So it seems like, I would say, there's evidence that, for whatever reason, they're wanting to be seen," unquote. Puthoff went on to claim that federal officials have recovered four separate types of extraterrestrial life from various UFOs. Frankly, to save toner, I've deleted the pictures from my report, but if you want to see those, you can go to this particular website, and I'll give that at the end of the article. And it says people who have been involved in recoveries have said that there are at least four separate types. Now, I have not had direct access to that, but I believe the people who I talk to. Four separate types of life, unquote. While Puthoff did not elaborate on the specific types of suspected alien species, his former AAWSAP colleague, Dr. Eric Davis, previously revealed they included Nordics, Greys, Insectoids, and Reptilians, according to the New York Post. Well, now this is a loose speaking. This is far out stuff. Do I believe it? I don't know. I have to be honest. I really don't know what to believe. There have been UFO reports way back, centuries ago, strange things in the sky. Were they delusions, hoaxes? Again, I don't know. There were, in the early part of the 20th century, reports of apparent vehicles that far outshone anything that Nazi Germany had, the USA had, Britain or Soviet Union had, in terms of their performance, their ability to make sudden turns. I don't know. It's a mystery that has been a mystery since I was a boy. Now, let me see. I'm going to skip down here. A lot of this is about the different types. And again, it's pretty far out. Let me see if there's a little bit here. Okay, let's see now. He describes the different kinds of so-called species. One of them says the insectoids reportedly resemble a praying mantis and are bug-like beings. And they seem to be pretty rare. Heckin' Lively added that. Well, you see who Mr. Heckin' Lively is? That's Kent Heckin' Lively, author of Catastrophic Disclosure. And he also was speaking to Fox News. Well, let me see now. In 2023, former Air Force Intelligence Officer and UAP, that's the modern name, UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, I think that's what's short for, UAP Task Force member David Grush, G-R-U-S-C-H, provided congressional testimony claiming that the federal government possessed, quote, non-human biologics, unquote, pulled from dozens of downed UFOs. The New York Post reporter. Well, let's see now. Here's a quote that Mr. Farrar said on Jesse Waters' Prime Time. He said, a number of the people I interviewed in my film, senior intelligence officials, went on the record saying that there have been dozens of crashed craft of non-human origin over the years. Unquote. Well, if you want to read the whole, then, once again, go to Fox News. Very recent, so probably you can still get it. May 25th. As I record this, that was just yesterday. And it just says, UFO insider claims U.S. has bodies of four different alien species, etc. Fox News, May 25th. Now, many of you have heard of Roswell, New Mexico, where supposedly a flying saucer crashed in 1947. Now, the Air Force actually said it was a flying saucer. But then very quickly, a day or two later, they revoked that and said, oh, no, it was just a weather balloon. Well, I don't know. At the time, I don't even know if I was born then. I was born in 1947. I couldn't tell you what month that took place. But if you want to have some fun reading, if you like to unsolved mysteries, go to the internet and just type in the word Roswell, R-O-S-W-E-L-L, UFO, Roswell, UFO, and you will probably find umpteen hundred, maybe umpteen thousand references, some skeptical and some saying, yep, it was a flying saucer, all right, with little aliens from outer space. Don't know. Couldn't tell you what it is. Now, here's a more down-to-earth article. From LifeSite News, May 25th, Swiss-based tech company says it would not comply with Canada's dystopian internet bill. Now, we'd all better pay attention to this sort of thing because that could come here. Canada so far seems to be much more, how should we say it, much more in on stifling dissent. And censoring things. This is by Anthony Murdoch, Monday, May 25th, LifeSite News. One of the world's foremost internet visual private network, or VPN, companies has stated that it would not comply with a, quote, dystopian, unquote, Canadian government bill, which, if passed, would both give police extra powers to monitor and search Canadians' online digital activity without a warrant, and mandate that logs be kept of user data. Proton VPN, a Swiss-based tech company, said there is, quote, no universe, unquote, in which it would log user data for the purpose of giving it to the government or officials on demand. The Proton, in a recent post on X, quote, we're going to reiterate that one more time, there is no universe in which Proton VPN compromises its no logs policy. Proton was referring to Bill C-22, which was introduced by Canadian Public Safety Minister Gary Anastasiadis. That's a long name, but I think I pronounced it right, Anastasiadis. And that bill purportedly was to address privacy concerns related to another bill, Bill C-2, that would have permitted police and government officials to open and examine Canadians' personal mail. It would also ban cash donations over $10,000. And it's my understanding that in the USA, you can make cash donations over $10,000, but I think you do have to report it, or the bank does. And I think that you can't be taxed, although I don't quite know how that works. I have a vague memory of something like that. But moving on, Proton said that it's written, Bill C-22, quote, empowers the government to order VPN providers in Canada to retain metadata for up to a year, unquote. The Swiss company noted how the European Union's highest court has already struck down this type of mass data retention legislation twice, suggesting it won't stand up to scrutiny. Bill C-22, known as the Lawful Access Act, would require internet service providers across Canada to retain metadata, including location and transmission data, for up to 1 year. Proton's general manager, David Peterson, recently said that complying with any foreign surveillance orders in a legally prudent manner is a criminal offense under Swiss law. He said, quote, we'll defend our Canadian users and never compromise them. We will fight C-22's application by every means available. All right, and I'm going to stop there because I see our time is flying. But if you want to get more on that, go to LifeSite News, Monday, May 25th. Swiss-based tech company is the beginning of the headline. Again, if you'd like to write to me, I'd love to hear from you. The address is Lou, L-O-U, capitally, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And we might even see the sun in the next few days. We've had a period of rain or at least cloudy weather for the last several days. A front has been stuck pretty much over the Delmarva Peninsula and Delaware and Maryland and a little bit of Virginia. And it's supposed to move out by Thursday. Well, here it is Tuesday as we're recording this. You'll hear it on Thursday. So maybe by the time you hear this, if you're doing it Thursday evening, maybe I'll see the sun. I'll believe it when I see it. Ah, now, on a more sober note, from the Wall Street Journal, here's an article, Doctors, Hospitals Struggle to Keep Up with Ebola's Spread. This is by Nicholas Barrio. And I believe this is also May 24th or 5th. For some reason, I didn't get the date, but I know it was within the last couple of days. So it's either May 24th, 25th, possibly even the 26th. I'm not sure. And this is Dateline Nairobi, Kenya. The fast-spreading Ebola virus is overwhelming creaking hospitals and clinics in the Democratic Republic of Congo, dimming hopes for quick containment of what is already the third largest outbreak of the killer disease in history. With at least 750 suspected cases and an official death count of 177 as of this weekend, and the actual toll is likely higher, patients are being treated in ordinary wards because of a lack of dedicated Ebola treatment centers in the hardest hit areas, according to the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Health centers are the epicenter, or in the epicenter of the outbreak. Ituri Province and other parts of eastern Congo are so short-staffed that medical personnel rely on local ethnic and religious leaders to spread information about safe practices that might inhibit transmission of the disease, such as hand washing and avoiding contact with infected people or corpses. Some health facilities are turning away patients with other serious diseases to focus on the influx of Ebola cases, local health officials say. And Jean Kaseya, a Director General of Africa CDC, said at a briefing Saturday in Kampala in neighboring Uganda, hospitals are fighting with no tools at all. We are in the hardest phase of the outbreak. We need to act with urgency. This is overwhelming, unquote. And in addition to the surging cases in Congo, Uganda has reported 5 Ebola patients, one of whom has died. Governments have tightened control measures, including a ban on all passenger flights to and from Ituri Province's capital, Bunia. Humanitarian and emergency flights must now be cleared by the Congolese government, raising concerns about how quickly relief teams can access hot zones. And it goes on with some other descriptions. Rwanda, just across the border from the Congolese cities of Goma and Bukavu, has closed crossing points. Well, there's a great deal more to this. It says the Karabuni Wamama Hospital in Bunia, where health workers usually treat victims of sexual violence, is now admitting Ebola patients. This is a lengthy article, a very good one, from the Wall Street Journal. And if you'd like to look at it, unfortunately, for some reason, I didn't catch the data, but I know it was within the last couple of days. Here it is, May 26th, as I record this. So if you check out the 24th, 25th, 26th of May this year, you'll see it. Its title was Doctors, Hospitals Struggle to Keep Up with Ebola Spread, Wall Street Journal. Now, an interesting thing that's been another controversy that has been unsolved, although some scientists believe they've solved it, but there are some holes in their argument. From Fox News, this is back on April 26th, and I just happened to see it, by Andrea Margolis of Fox News. Unexpected food DNA found on cloth believed to have wrapped Jesus, study reveals. And I'll just say, because it doesn't give very much background, this is the Shroud of Turin, so-called, because it's kept at the cathedral in Turin, Italy. And many people say, yes, this appears to be the burial cloth of Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus Christ. Others say, no, there's no way, it doesn't agree with the Bible, and you can't even trace it back to the earliest times. But I'll read up for what it's worth as time permits here. Researchers who recently identified food DNA on the Shroud of Turin are finding that just the burial cloth believed to have wrapped Jesus Christ may have been contaminated over time. In a preprint study published in March on BioRxiv, a group of international researchers analyzed DNA traces from 1978 samples taken from a relic. Scientists identified plant traces by sequencing microscopic DNA fragments found in dust and fibers collected from the shroud, rather than discovering visible food remains. They found a host of different species, with carrot and bread wheat the most dominant. And I'm going to skip over a little bit to give some of the scientific names of what they did find for the different organic materials, different kinds of wheat, rye, maize, peppers, tomatoes, potatoes, and so on. They mentioned that some of the species were new world crops, including tomatoes, maize, and peanuts, pointing to likely contamination after 1492, in other words, after Columbus. Let's see now. Here's a little bit more about the different kinds of biological contaminants they found. Researchers found that the shroud's age cannot be determined through metagenomics, or genetic profiling, because this methodology is unable to provide any robust evidence supporting either a medieval origin or a history dating back to millennia, unquote. And the study's authors wrote, quote, nevertheless, our findings constitute a novel and significant contribution to the field, thoroughly elucidating the biological traces left by centuries of social, cultural, and ecological engagement, unquote. Skipping down, it says the researchers declined to provide comment to Fox News Digital, noting that the final results have not yet been published. The Shroud, kept in Turin, Italy since 1578, is a documented history beginning in the mid-14th century. The relic has been the subject of intense scrutiny over the centuries. Radiocarbon dating conducted in 1988 dated the clock to between 1260 and 1390 AD. However, and this is Lou speaking now, that has often been debunked because they use parts of cloth that have been contaminated by a fire, and therefore the carbon content would not have been that of the original cloth. So, you can find a great deal of debate if you go on the internet and just type in the Shroud of Turin as a search. You will find, just like UFOs, umpteen different references, different websites, and some of them will say, yes, this is a burial cloth that Jesus was buried in, and others will say, no, no way. It doesn't quite agree with the Bible, and like it says here, you can't trace it back for sure to the time of Christ. The one interesting thing that this article doesn't mention, to the best of my knowledge, is that the image on the shroud is like a photographic negative. What would be dark in a real picture is light, and what would be light is dark. And if it wasn't something like the burial cloth of Christ, how was that image made? Who would go to all that work for a cloth that you can barely see? Why would anybody, as a hoax, make something like that? Well, I don't know. But if you want to read the whole thing, that's from Fox News back on April 26th. But it seems to be still available because I got it yesterday. Unexpected food DNA found on cloth believed to have wrapped Jesus, study reveals. Well, our music is coming on. That means our time is up. Once again, write to me if you want to. Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And you can go to the website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll have more things next week. Don't fail to turn in. Thanks again. Good night.